special edition of Anything Goes. As everybody knows, Anything Goes is on Saturday morning, 10:30 to 1, here on Cortez Community Radio. But today, I have a special guest. Rick Bachner and I are here in the studio. And this show is a really unique show, and I'm calling it Anything Goes to Church. And you're going, what? Howie? And it's true. We are going... I have with me and Rick Dorian Baxter, who also goes by the name Elvis Priestley, and he's the Bishop of Beale Street and of the Christ the King Graceland Church. Awesome. So, should we just throw on some Elvis and start there?
That sounds wonderful. And what an honor to be here on the Cortez Community Radio with you, Howard, and Rick. And, you know, for having me on, I just want to say thank you. Thank you very much.
Get ready now, go, cat, go, but don't you step on my... Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready now, go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Well, you can knock me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place. Well, do anything that you want to do, but not, honey, lay off them shoes. And don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoes. Let's go, cat! Burn my house, steal my car, drink my liquor from an old fruit jar. Well, do anything that you want to do, but honey, lay off of my shoes. And don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Rock it! For the money, two for the show, three to get ready now, go, 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 but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe. Well, it's blue, blue, blue suede shoes, blue, blue, blue suede shoes, yeah! Blue, blue, blue suede shoes, baby, blue, blue, blue suede shoes. Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe.
All right, what a way to start.
That's great. Yeah. I just want to put some local context to this. This is Rick Bachner here. My daughters have been involved in tree planting for years, and they made friends with Dorian's daughter, Rachel, who was a tree planter with them for years. And for years, they would bring Rachel to our place on when they had a few days off or they needed to rest up or recuperate from the rigors of tree planting. And over the years, I began to hear about Rachel's father and all the things that he's been involved in. So it was great that yesterday that he showed up on the island and we decided to do this show on impulse, as most great things happen. But this is someone who's a ordained Anglican priest, an archbishop, an Elvis impersonator, a political activist. And I'm just fascinated by the way those things interplay in the same person and give dimension to his life. So that's kind of be where we're going today. So maybe we could start with the religious aspect. How did you come to be a priest?
Well, it's a good question, Rick. And in fact, it had a lot to do with the fact that I heard Elvis's gospel music as a teenager, and it kind of amazed me that this icon, because I had first heard Elvis when I was 5 years old in Africa. My My dad was a major in the British Army out there, and we had just bought a brand new hi-fi. Now, I'm grateful that you guys might know what a hi-fi was. Yeah. Oh, good. This is we've got one right here. Look at that. And a lot of people don't know, but in our vintage, it
it's
was
a high five now.
High five. That's right.
My son
that's right.
Walked up there at our table with a Jimi Hendrix record once and said, "How do you make this thing work, Dad?"
Isn't that funny? Eh? Well, you know, we had this brand new hi-fi. The family gathered around it, and it was the day after my fifth birthday. So it was, I guess it was 1955 and around April the 4th. And to my astonishment, Elvis came on the radio, and he was singing Heartbreak Hotel. And I remember my dad said, I dropped the red fire truck that I was playing with from my birthday, and I just stood mesmerized, staring at the hi-fi. And at the end of that, I said, "Daddy, could I have a record by that singer?" He said, "I should think so, boy." He always called me boy. "I should think so, boy." And the next day, I had my first Elvis. So I've been doing, I just celebrated my 60th birthday, April the 3rd this year. This is my 55th year of being an Elvis impersonator. And I'm apparently the oldest... you know, I guess if you had exactly, that's right. And and of course, to answer Rick's question, though, the Elvis gospel music had a massive impact on me. I was confirmed by the first black bishop of Mombasa, Kenya, in Mombasa Cathedral, but I allowed all that just to go by the way. And a combination of Elvis's music, and I was a school teacher, my first year of teaching in the Unionville area, Ontario, and a young boy in my grade four class invited me to his church, and one thing led to another, and I found myself, for want of a better way of phrasing it, coming alive in Christ. Like it all gelled. But Elvis's gospel music had a massive impact. And so I continued then until about 1980, working in the church and teaching Sunday school. And then I decided, you know what, I think I should become a priest. And in my, you know, It would have to be 3 years of you know, postgraduate work at Wycliffe College. I became head of divinity there, University of Toronto, Toronto School of Theology. The more I studied theology, the more convinced I became of the power of the resurrection and the dimension we call heaven. And I was able to comfort people with a real sense of understanding that this dimension is not the only one. And of course, I began to use Elvis's music. We just started with Blue Suede Shoes, and I thought, you know, music is such a powerful medium. So I would then get up with the congregation and sing, "Well, it's one for the Father, two for the Son, three for the Holy Spirit, and your life has just begun, and you can do anything, but don't turn Jesus away." And the band would come in. "You could do anything, you know, but don't turn Jesus away." Then they would sing, "Jesus is the King of Kings, Jesus is the King of Kings, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus is the King of Kings. Oh, yeah." And, you know, everyone loved it. And it was, and then, of course, you are the same vintage as me, thank goodness. And I understand you're both good old rockers. The Beach Boys were big. And so we took that. And I would, with my band, I called it Jesus Rock of Our Salvation. And the motto was reclaiming rock and roll music for the rock of our salvation. And so Surfing USA became, "If everybody was Christian in Canada today, everybody be busy living the Christian way. There'd be no more murders, there'd be no more strife. Everybody be busy living the Christian life." And I was in Thunder Bay, so it was inside, outside, Thunder Bay. Jesus, Jesus, every day. And they loved it, you know. So it was, that's a long answer to a short question.
Right, if I can get a line in for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a great interviewer. I love interviews like this. John Lennon referred to his hearing Elvis Presley for the first time as the day that England went from a black and white movie to a color movie.
I got goosebumps when you said that. Isn't that amazing?
And, you know, that clearly would ring a bell for you.
Wow. I've heard John Lennon did say before Elvis there was nothing. Right. But I've never, that is, yeah. I'm going to get that quote off you because that gave me goosebumps. What would, you know, good old John Lennon, he was very good at being able to graphically give you a picture of what he was saying in his songs as well. But that really says it all, doesn't it? Because if you actually add together, I'm not sure whether you're vintage enough to remember the English competition for Elvis, Cliff Richards. Do you remember him at all? Well, Cliff Richard went on record to say that if it hadn't been for Elvis Presley, there would never have been a Cliff Richard. Now, the Beatles said, if it wasn't for Elvis, there'd never be the Beatles, because if you look at the Beatles early on, they're all trying to look like Elvis.
Oh, sure. Yeah, sure.
So if you then add together the impact of Elvis, the Beatles, and Cliff Richard, you've got pretty well the whole market sewn up, you know?
Yeah.
Almost.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So what is it about Elvis that he seems to be applicable to everything, you know?
And yes.
People have used him to sell everything, to do everything.
I know.
And something about his innocence, something about
I think you're right, yeah. I mean, I think the innocence, I mean, and you know, the other thing was, he was a white Southern boy that actually learned his music on Beale Street, which is really bathed in black, you know, rhythm, soul, and blues and gospel. And so I think, you know, all of that was amazing enough. But to answer your question, Rick, and what was it about him? I think it had a lot to do with his humility. You know, here was a man that was never ashamed of his humble beginnings. And in fact, I'll never forget when he got, you know, a big booking in Dallas, in the Astrodome there, they were pretty racist at that particular juncture. And when they heard that his group, the Sweet Inspirations, were three black ladies, they said, oh, no, you can't bring them. And Elvis canceled the whole thing. He says, there's no way that I'm going to come. Well, they didn't want to cancel. They'd sold all the tickets. So they said, okay, you can bring them. Elvis said, no. Not only will I bring them, but they will be in the lead Cadillac, and they will be given absolute, you know, top status. So he was an early activist as an anti-racist. I mean, this man loved black and white people and everything in between alike. He had no time for people that were racist, you know. And I think that if there ever was an entertainer who straddles time, race, creed, and religion, it's Elvis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I meet Muslims that love Elvis, Hindus, Buddhists, you know, atheists.
Yeah, we were thinking next time you're here of having an ecumenical council, because there's a Jewish Elvis, Elvis Schmelvis.
Did I tell you about it?
We've seen the movie.
Isn't that hilarious?
We've seen the movie, and we've got you, and now we need a Muslim Elvis just to
Wouldn't
complete.
Wouldn't that be something? My goodness, yes. And maybe a Gandhi Elvis, too.
That would be good.
It would be very good, yes.
Great. So how did the church receive your passion for Elvis?
Well, actually, the church loved it, and it was fine until Bishop Ronald Ferris came along. And, you know, ironically, I had done a big Elvis fundraiser, raised thousands of dollars for his diocese a few years earlier. But when he became bishop of my diocese, he didn't seem to remember that. And he gave me a phone call and said, you know, I'd like you to shave off the sideburns, get a haircut, and no more of this Elvis Presley stuff. And I said, Your Grace, I said, you know, let's talk about this, you know. And he said Elvis was an evil man. And what really shocked me, he is a man that has the same theological and university background I have. I have a B.A., from York University in World Religion, and I have my Master's in Divinity from the University of Toronto, and he has the same 2 degrees. And to hear him say Elvis was an evil man, and then he shocked me further by saying, if you take the name Elvis and you move the letters around, it spells evils. And I said, and I couldn't believe it. It was my day off. I had my blue jeans on, had a Levi's belt on. I looked down, I said, Your Grace, it also spells Levi's, and now I'm doodling, and it spells lives. I said, what's the big deal?
You know, what does God spell backwards?
Exactly, exactly. That's well said. So I never thought of that. Now, that would have been a good one. You know? So the long and short of it is that I said to him, please don't let's be ridiculous. You know, and he said, you heard what I said? If you don't do these things, you're out. And then he hung up the phone. 3 days later, I got a call from the Reverend Ian Noseworthy, and this was at a large church in St. Jude's Church in Scarborough, Ontario. He said, and I was scheduled to preach that Sunday. He said, Dorian, apparently Bishop Ferris has had a teleconference with all the bishops in the Anglican Church of Canada, and they've banned you from every pulpit because of the Elvis priestly motif. I said, you got to be kidding. I said, listen, I'm sure there's a mistake. He said, well, you can't preach. I can't. They've
Except
told me.
Las Vegas, maybe.
Well, there you go. There you go. Yeah, that's right. Well, we're dealing with Canada,
and,
you know.
And Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you been to?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You have to, before you leave,
yeah,
take your 5 minutes extra, yeah, drive down when you're heading to the ferry, drive, yeah, down to Whale Town, and we have an Anglican church.
Oh, my goodness.
That hasn't been in use in decades.
Really?
I've lived here 40 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't think there was ever, you know, Reverend Bowes ever really used that church.
In Isn't that something?
Christmas Eve. And,
yes.
And,
yes.
There have been funerals held there, you know, memorials,
yes,
and stuff. But it's hardly used. But it's a beautiful old 1920s.
Oh, I've got to see that.
Church.
Yes.
And a good friend of ours, at one point when she was president of the Whale Town Community Club, contacted the Anglican Church about it, and they didn't know they owned it.
And oh my goodness, isn't that funny?
And so it's totally up in the air as to who actually,
wow,
owns it. The property owners now have restored it and put a new roof on it and repaired it, and,
wow,
they feel that they own it, and the Anglican Church probably doesn't care.
No.
They're selling the church next door to here right now.
They are, oh,
yeah,
dear.
They're trying to sell the Manson Church.
A couple of openings for you.
Well, there you go. Look at that.
You got two churches.
You know,
two Anglican churches.
Well, I've been looking to raise my congregation to 1,000, and there's 1,000 people on the island, so this should be good, you know? But,
good luck on that.
Yes. But I think that certainly... you know, it was remarkable, because what he did without realizing it, he ended up putting me on the front page of over 6,800 newspapers worldwide, because when he banned me, the media got a hold of it, and I was telling Rick yesterday that the media said, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm Anglican. I can trace my heritage back to 1490, which is 2 years before Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. And I said, I have great confidence that this is just a silly mistake. Well, it didn't turn out to be that way. And they said, well, you know, what are you going to do if it doesn't? I said, well, contact me in the fall. Well, October came, they hadn't responded to my letters or my phone calls. So what I did, I said, well, if I don't hear from them by Elvis's birthday, I said, because the Anglican Church believes in symbolism. And I said, there's a movie I saw with Kevin Costner called The Field of Dreams. And it was, if you build it, they will come. And I said, I've spoken to the Anglicans in Newmarket, and if this kind of foolishness persists, then I will open a church on the Sunday closest to Elvis's birthday to create some Anglican symbolism. That was January the 5th, 2003. And you know what? 271 people marched in, and we've never looked back. And of course, it was about 2 months later, two bishops, Bishop Jukes from Calgary and Bishop Allahand from Hamilton, came and consecrated me as Archbishop of the Federation of Independent Anglican Churches of North America. And we ended up, we've now become registered federally and provincially as the newest Anglican denomination in the world. And that was about 4 years ago. And so we've never looked back.
What is the proper name of your congregation?
Well, the actual church is Christ the King Graceland Independent Anglican Church of Canada, affiliated with the Federation of Independent Anglican Churches of North America. Now, if I'd been thinking, because what happened was Mr. Ferris, the bishop, tried to punish me further by arbitrarily removing my license to marry. And so I had to get another minute. I mean, it was quite an affront. You know, treating me as if I was... He wanted to defrock me, but he couldn't do it. I'd done nothing wrong other than the sideburns and the little comb over that turns me into Elvis, you know, because this ponytail does come over, and when the wind blows, if I don't put my head down, I flip my lid, you know, so it's kind of interesting. But so having now become the founding Archbishop of the Federation and been consecrated in true Anglican fashion, which is, you know, the Pauline apostolic succession of laying on of hands, all of that is total Anglican pedigree. All I did really was pull a mini Henry VIII on the Anglican Church of Canada. And so I now not only have my license back for the last 4 years, but I now license my own priests. I've got three bishops under me. I license them to do weddings. So I really, if Bishop Ferris is listening right now, all I could say to him and the Anglican bishops is, God bless you and thank you. Thank you very much.
With Elvis Presley, Dorian Baxter, and Rick Bachner, and Howie here on Anything Goes to Church.
Yeah.
Well, I had the pleasure this morning of watching a documentary film that was made about Dorian, part of which was that filmed in Memphis?
Yes, Memphis and across Canada and the States, yeah.
Right, right.
Yes, it was interesting Rick would mention that, because the song that we just listened to, He Touched Me, was a major song responsible for my conversion experience. And it's interesting, arbitrarily, the film crew, the producer, chose a phrase out of that song to name the movie. The movie is called Eternity Rolls. And if anybody, you know, that is listening is interested, they can go onto YouTube and they can see an 8-minute leader into that film by just simply typing in Eternity Rolls. But it comes from that line where Elvis sings, I will praise him while eternity rolls. souls. Oh, he touched me, my Jesus touched me. And oh, the joy that floods my soul. Something happened, I've been changed, and now I know my Jesus touched me and he made me whole. And of course it's the Eternity Rolls from that I'll Praise Him While Eternity Rolls that they named the movie.
So is that Eternity Rolls?
Like Rock and Rolls? Eternity Rolls, yeah. R-O-L-L-S, yeah. Good point to clarify.
Well, no, it's just I was thinking I'm more of a Dylan fan and Desolation Row.
Oh, yeah. I like Dylan as well. That's good. But I was interested earlier because you were talking about John Lennon, and, you know, it's a fascinating thing. Even in the movie, they mention, you know, John Lennon. And what's of some significance is that if you add together the music of the Beatles and Elvis and Cliff Richard, I mean, it's a huge corner.
So along these lines, while you were talking, I pulled up a website called Z King and I.
Oh.
And it's John Lennon's relationship to Elvis Presley.
Isn't that brilliant?
And it doesn't seem, in a quick read, I don't see that quote that I said about the world going black and white, going to color from black and white. But this is about Lennon's relationship. You know.
Interesting.
What I did was I Googled John Lennon and Elvis.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's boom, brilliant. Well, what's amazing to me, of course, is, you know, the musical genius of John Lennon and the fact that, as I said earlier, you know, he would make the statement, before Elvis, there was nothing. You know, I mean, that's a pretty... For someone of John Lennon's caliber, you pay attention when someone like that says those things.
Well.
Yes.
Yeah, there
yes.
it is. Yeah.
Is that it right there?
That's Lennon in 57.
No. I thought
like
that
Elvis.
Was Elvis. Yeah. I really... Like, I didn't have my glasses on. We're looking at the computer here. I thought it was Elvis. Yeah. That's unbelievable. Yeah,
that was when he was in the Quarrymen.
In 57. Look at that. I mean, you'd think he was Elvis, wouldn't you?
Yeah, so...
My goodness.
So, I keep looking at the parable side of the life of Elvis, and in that context, who was Colonel Tom Parker?
You know, that's a very good question, Rick. Colonel Tom Parker continues to be a bit of an enigma, really. What I found interesting about him, he was definitely a carnival man. You know, he was known for his dancing chickens, and people don't realize this, but these chickens, they would come from miles around to watch them, and his claim to fame was that they would dance for him, and as he sped up the music, so the chickens, it was unbelievable.
So he had an electric shock.
Then they discovered he had a gigantic hot plate, and he would increase the heat, you know, which is
sort of what he did to Elvis.
In one sense, you're right. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right. He had Elvis booked to the hilt. I mean, Elvis would have, 16 cities in 16 days. And, I mean, that's where I think the illicit, the use of prescription drugs.
I've always found it interesting that Elvis never left North America.
And that was entirely...
Before Europe.
I guess you're aware... Are you aware of the reason for that?
Because Tom Parker wasn't an American citizen.
That's right. Tom Parker was an illegal alien, and he didn't want Elvis going anywhere without him.
Right.
And if he went, they wouldn't have let him back in the country.
Right.
So that was interesting. He did come to Canada. He played twice, April the 2nd and April the 3rd. My birthday, actually, but I was 7 years old. It was 1957. And he played in Toronto and in Ottawa.
Didn't he play Vancouver?
Sorry, Vancouver. That's
yeah.
right. Yes,
yeah,
because right.
We have a neighbor who's a relative of the DJ Red Robinson.
You're
and
kidding.
Red Robinson's two claims to fame among his claims to
yes,
fame.
Yes, yes.
Are that he introduced both Elvis and the Beatles.
No.
And his real claim to fame is that on the stage at the Pacific Coliseum at the P&E, he went out while the Beatles were performing at the request of the sheriff, the city police, to tell the crowd to quiet down. Really? Threw, physically threw him off the stage and said a word I'm not allowed to say on.
Really? I didn't know that.
And that was his big claim to fame. Wow. John Lennon told him to.
Wow. Isn't that interesting, eh? My goodness.
So, a little bit of...
A little bit of, yes.
I will sidetrack you, so be careful.
Well, I'm especially honored to be in the presence of greatness here, because I understand that you, Howard, and Rick also are rock and rollers, and you know, I'm so pleased to meet you. I really am. And what was your background? I mean,
I grew up in New York City.
Wow.
Very liberal art family, political activists.
Wonderful.
Non-religious Jews in the early 60s, so I got
wonderful.
To rock and roll.
Isn't that great?
I saw everybody, and now I'm reliving it on Cortez Radio.
This is so good. And what instrument did you play?
I don't play.
Oh, okay. But now, Rick, you do play, and I've just, Rick just gave me a CD of him and Amy, his wonderful daughter. But prior to that, you also have some vinyl to you. Now, what was it? Was the Mad...
Vinyl,
it
was a band called Mad River.
Well, I'm going to hunt those. I'm going to buy those.
They're still out in CD, and we're still waiting for royalties.
Mad River. Well, if you had to categorize yourself in a particular genre, I mean, I know it's rock and roll, but would it be like a Creedence?
We weren't quite as boppy as Creedence. No. We were darker.
Oh, okay.
Chewier. We wrote all our own stuff, and we had long extended guitar breaks and occasional drum solo, but we were known as a kind of our first record, a dark psychedelic band, and our next record we kind of reverted to folk roots and did eclectic album that Capitol had no idea what to do with.
Oh, this is but Capitol went with you on tour then, eh?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm in the presence of greatness here, you know? So
let me pull this back to you and your life. And besides being an active priest and your involvement with Elvis in his life and Elvis impersonator, you've also been involved in Canadian politics.
Yes.
And... I'd like to just hear a little about your activist side and what that might entail.
Yes, well, I have to tell you that, you know, one of my main concerns has been the direction in which the Stephen Harper government is taking this country. And I was particularly shocked and mortified back in 2002 when there was a conspiracy between Stephen Harper and Peter McKay. Little did, because I'm a true blue Tory, a progressive conservative of the ilk of Joe Clark, going back to our original, you know, first Prime Minister, Sir John A. Macdonald. And so I was absolutely mortified when I saw the attempts by what was then the Canadian Reform Alliance Party to...
what does that spell?
Yeah,
that's an acronym for
That was interesting. That's CRAP, and you know that's right. And it took, and we've been getting nothing but that since the Harper government was in, if you don't mind me saying so. But I will tell you that of some significance, it took them 6 months to realize what that spelled. Now that tells you something about the leadership. And 6 months later, they quickly took the R out and changed it into CAP, Canadian Alliance Party, took out the reform. But what they did was they actually managed to dupe Peter McKay into believing that if he would try and dupe us, it would pay off for him. Well, McKay is now, you know, pretty well, you know, moribund as a politician. But what's interesting is Peter McKay became our own Judas Iscariot. And whilst on the one hand he said, listen, you know, if you guys... David Orchard, you may remember, was one of the three contenders for leadership after Joe Clark had stepped down. And he was the low man on the totem. He carried about 800 votes with the delegates. And Peter McKay went to David Orchard and said, listen, you know, if you'll throw your votes behind me, I will honestly, you know, represent the PC party properly. David Orchard said, will you sign an affidavit vowing that you, if we do this and we get you in as leader of the PC party, you promise that you will never even contemplate joining up with this renegade group calling themselves, you know, the Canadian Reform Alliance. And he agreed, and we've got a copy of the affidavit. The ink wasn't even dry on that affidavit. And of course, you know the dastardly deed. And I'll tell you when it occurred. It occurred on the anniversary of Pearl Harbor, another great deed of deceit. So this party that Stephen Harper is now a part of is actually a party that was conceived in deceit, born in betrayal. And so we sued our leader, the Honorable Sinclair Stevens, because we re-registered our party and we had a court battle with the federal court and we won the case. And of course, we managed to re-establish ourselves as the legitimate party of Sir John A. Macdonald. So when we won the case, Elizabeth Hennigan, who was the judge, she said, yes, there's no doubt Stephen Harper, Peter McKay and Pierre Elliott Kingsley, head of Canada Elections at the time, violated the provisions of the Canada Elections Act, and she said, by rights, I should give them back their name, Canadian Reform Alliance Party, the CRAP we talked about. But she said, I think it'll be too confusing for the Canadian public. I disagreed with that, of course, and what really bothered me, Rick and Howard, was the realization that when Stephen Harper and Peter McKay managed to pull off this dreadful deceit against the Canadian nation, they then stole nearly $4 million out of the PC party bank account because for some reason, and it was done on a Sunday, this has never before been ever done on a Sunday. The last time any deal like this was done on a Sunday was to cope with the Winnipeg flood. Well, let me tell you, they didn't wait the 30 days. We caught up with them 4 years later. But of course, 4 years later, Stephen Harper's palmed himself off as a Tory. He is not a Tory, and I'm happy to say we are now the PC Federal Party. We're known as the Progressive Canadian Party, and people can find us on progressivecanadian.org. Our leader, the Honorable Sinclair Stevens, a year ago in October, I was elected as president of that party. We are aiming for a minimum of 250 candidates in the next federal election, and we are certainly hoping to bring back the democratic principles upon which this nation was founded are actually based upon the Westminster model of parliamentary democracy, which means as Prime Minister you are bound by law, following those guidelines, to consult Parliament. Mr. Harper thinks he is George Bush Jr. the second. He's treating his position as if he were president, and I have never seen this nation more close to a dictatorship since its inception. And we have to, as Canadians. And what I heard from Rick about the, what is this company again?
Plutonic Power, the run-of-river projects going on the BC coast.
Unbelievable. And now I know about this, we'll be adding this to the long list of items that we're dealing with as a federal party. But this may shock you. Since coming to power, this can be checked and validated any time. Since coming to power, Mr. Harper has allowed over 112,000 Canadian companies to be taken over by American and foreign ownership. This is unheard of. Unheard of. And people don't even realize it's happening. Proroguing Parliament twice in the same, within a 12-month period, in order to stay in power. Unbelievable. So thank you for mentioning that.
John Stewart did a routine about about when the U.S. does this, they impeach the president and they do this.
Yes.
And in Canada, they call their mother the queen.
Yes. Well, that's another thing that shocked the life out of me, because the Governor General, I hate to say this, but honestly, she is charged with the duty of making sure this stuff doesn't happen. And, you know, all Mr. Harper did the first time round was feed her a few chunks of raw seal meat, and she gave him the nod.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So there we go.
Okay, well, let's, are we ready to wrap, or where are we
at? I think we're getting close. How about one more song?
Okay, well.
Wonderful.
So we have queued up. We have, I'll let Dorian pick where queued up. We can either go to So High with the Jordanaires or All Shook Up for both of them.
Let's do both. That. Yes, yes, and the So High, of course, is not talking about any grass or the green grass of home. It's talking how high the love of God is. You know? Right. But mind you, I do say to people, you know, if you want to get high, get high on God, you know?
I'm itching like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my hand is shaky and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own two feet. Who do you think of when you have such luck? I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, please ask me what's on my mind. I'm a little mixed up, gonna feel fine when I'm near the girl that I love best. My heart beats so it scares me to death when she touches my hand. The chill I got, her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh. My tongue gets tied when I try to speak. My insides shake like a leaf on a tree. There's only one cure for this body of mine. That's to have that girl and her love so fine. She touches my head and what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, I'm all shook up.
All right, we're here, and this is Anything Goes to Church with the Reverend Elvis Presley, Dorian Baxter, and Rick and I.
And we're just going to wrap it up now. I hope Jimmy Hansen, if you're out there, you're listening, because
this one's
for you. And I'd just like to thank Dorian for being here with us today. And what an amazing life, from Kenya to Ontario to Graceland and Las Vegas and to Cortez. So
I'm gonna get you back. We'll talk.
Yeah,
about that
we got two empty old churches. So if we need the Christ the King Graceland Church here on Cortez, we'll have to get some kind of co-op together and pick up the building. Okay, just any last words for us, Dorian?
Well, you know, I just want to say this, that I was chatting with Howard, and of course, you know, we've got quite the ecumenical group here. All we need is a Muslim imam and a Hindu pundit, and we're ready to bring the whole world, because you have a Jewish background. My grandmother was Jewish, and of course, I believe the mercy of Christ, the mercy of God is bigger than any mountain, bigger than any cosmic imagination. And so I'd like to say this. Just in case we, for one reason or another, don't meet up here, I'd like to end with this little verse that Elvis actually had sung at his mother's funeral, because I love the way it's as if your loved ones, whoever they are sending you, and if anyone's out there listening, they've lost a loved one, take this as an Elvis gram from them to you, and it goes like this. Although we'll never meet again, this side of heaven, I will see you on that beautiful shore where the Son of God resides forever and ever, where there is light and life and love forevermore. Although we'll never meet again this side of heaven, I will greet you on that beautiful shore. And they will. Your loved ones will be there. It'll all make sense. And regardless of what our denomination or our faith down here on earth, it'll all make sense one day, and we shall know even as we are known. And so I can feel a sermon coming on, Howard, and Rick, I'm going to get off quickly before I botch it. God bless you, and thank you. Thank you very much, and we'll see you again.
And Elvis has left the building.
That's great.
Website www.elvispriestley.com, and for the
L-E-Y for Priestley,
L-E-Y,
and the political one is www.dorianbaxter.ca, and if you're interested in the federal party, it's www.progressivecanadian.org. and thirdly, we didn't mention this, but my social activism, I became the first Canadian to successfully break forever the immunity of all the Children's Aid Societies of Canada, and I founded the largest accountability organization in the country. It's called the National Association for Public and Private Accountability, and the website that hosts that is www.canadacourtwatch.com, and you just click on to a welcome from the founding national chairman, Archbishop Dorian Baxter. So thank you for that, a little blurb. And Rick and Howard, I mean this sincerely. I feel like I've known you all my life. And what an honor to be with you. Thank you for making me welcome. And may God bless you and every member of this beautiful island of Cortez. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
I'm sure we'll be seeing you here again. And that wraps up this special edition, holiday edition of Anything Goes to Church.